So I'm thrilled to be with you all. And last week, Sarah and I, my wife and I, were in New York. So we were actually on Sunday morning flying home from New Jersey, New York. So we were spending a few days, just a couple of few days with some friends who were a part of the church until last summer. They got a job in New Jersey. And so Rex and Kathy Curtis headed that way. So we went and spent a couple days with them, then drove to Massachusetts and did a baby dedication with their first grandchild, their granddaughter. So that was a good time. And then we zip back, as you do. And we have been in a series called History Repeats. History Repeats, so we're going to continue that this morning. Last week, Kara shared with us, and she brilliantly taught us the next step in the journey. And so this morning, we're going to continue doing just that. So I would love to say a word of prayer, and then we will jump into our text. If you're following along with the Bible app or whatever it may be, if you want to jump to Joshua chapter 3, that's where we'll spend most of our time. But of course, we're going to be all over the place. So, gracious God, we bless you for right here, right now. This time and space that we have to immerse ourselves in your truth. And God, we desire to hear from you, so may our ears be open and our hearts be absorbent to what you have for us this morning. Teach, lead, guide, provoke, push, pull us toward you as we desire to follow you as your invitation has been. And so, God, as the psalmist has said, may the words of my mouth, the posture and meditation of my heart bring honor and glory to you now, my Lord, my rock, and my Savior. And may we be open to what you have for us. In the name of Christ, we pray. Amen and amen. Anybody have a question on the series graphic? If somebody had said to me, usually people don't even note it. Maybe you're like, I don't even pay attention to that stuff. But when we were putting together this series, and it's some of the, what we'd say the teaching pastors or lead teaching pastors of the different campuses, I don't know how we landed on this, but the idea of history, obviously the word repeating, history repeats. And then we flamingos were like, well, we need some sort of summertime feel. Well, what says summer like a flamingo? And so there are, as you do, you're always constantly avoiding flamingos in Michigan. But so then they just put them in a wheel, like, yeah, they repeat. I just think that's funny. When they put it up there, I'm like, yeah, that makes some sense and zero sense. Great, let's do that. So that's a good time. I just thought it would be a little commentary on that for our peoples. So we're going to jump in. We started in this place. So we'll start in with a map because we should always start with a map. We started in this place. So first slide, we're going to be here. You have the Jordan River. So we're in Israel. So if we step into Israel, where we've been in the story, is we're actually right here, just north of the Dead Sea, a little bit east of Jericho. And this is where we began. We began with this location is because this is where Jesus was baptized. And so we began in that place of John baptizing Jesus, but it was the idea that this is a new day and a new way forward. Jesus is stepping into the waters and saying, it's a new day, there is a new way forward, and we're going to step into this. But for the people of that day, they would be going, well, this place looks really familiar. Haven't we been here before? Was kind of week one, raising the question, haven't we been here before? And the answer is yes, because geography holds memory. And so Jesus and John were inviting the people once again into the waters of change. Will you change? Can we change? And in this, the first people, they would understand, oh, this kind of echoes our ancestors' journey from Egypt out of slavery. Moses, who was leading the people out of slavery and what is known as the Exodus out of slavery and towards the promised land. And so to get there, though, one of the first obstacles, if you will, as they're coming out of Egypt, is they had to cross the Red Sea. And so it's this story of how God parts the Red Sea and the people cross over. And that seemed like a giant step, a giant leap for the people. What seemed like that, but really it was just the next right step on the journey, which led to Joshua. Moses is going to hand over the leadership mantle to a guy named Joshua, and he then is standing in this place. This is where they would be located, and they're like, oh, now we remember Joshua was literally in this place to lead the people into the promised land. And that crossing happened there, here. So when they see Jesus coming, it's essentially in this place, these waters have changed. They're going, we've been here before. But now they're here ready to take what seems to be the final step into the promised land. But what we're learning together is what seems like the final step is really just the next right step. And you've been there, right? You've been to this thing where thinking this step, you've been in your life where you're like, this is the step that's going to turn the page. It's going to be this. This will be the step in which my life, this is that big step in which it changes. We get over that hump, around that corner, or maybe it's for the business, in relationship. This is the step. But now you step back, whether it's months, years later, and you go, oh, that what seemed to be the step was really just the next right step. Just the next right step. And so now, within this story, we know that Moses isn't going to be the one leading these people into the promised land. That has been turned over to Joshua. And Kara taught us last week that Joshua's, the best thing about Joshua, if you will, isn't skills and abilities, but it was Joshua, the fact that we learned that God was with him. And it was the withness of God, God's withness with Joshua, that really is the difference maker. So I would say it this, before skills and abilities, it's God's withness that is our strength. That's where it all begins. We, of course, live in a culture where we go, what are the skills? What are the abilities? You know, where do we start? And it's like, well, great, whatever those are, without us being with God, knowing that God is with us, there's limits to that. So we keep going. We keep trekking through the desert, taking the next step toward the promised land. So what is the next step? This is a question we have today. We have God's withness, so what does it look like to continue the journey? So we're going to begin in Deuteronomy to get a shape of this story. So we'll begin in Deuteronomy 31, 7 and 8. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all these people. And when it says all Israel, just so you know, because if you're like, well, how many people is that? A couple hundred, few hundred? They would say after, and we don't have time to dig into all of it, but you're actually looking to about 2 million people. Okay? So this is no small thing there. So it says this. So all of Israel in the presence, Moses says, be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors to give them, and you must divide it among them as their inheritance. Next slide. The Lord, that is Yahweh himself, goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid and do not be discouraged. Now, this word before is actually a word picture. A lot of the Hebrew language, this was written in the Hebrew language, and this comes from the Eastern world then, where they were very picture-oriented. It is less about a literal word so much as it is a word picture. And this word picture is the word panim. Go ahead and say panim. Panim means face or before time or from before time. So the idea, the picture is when it says God goes before us, God is facing us. And essentially the word picture is God is going to face us and he is going to walk backwards as he goes so that he can keep eye contact with us and do this. Come on, come on. Come on, it's kind of like this picture. Next slide. Did you know that this is a thing now, running backwards? They say now, and first, just the science of it, they say it's good for you to run backwards because, oh, by the way, running forwards is rough on the knees, rough on the body, and to run backwards can reset the body, and it's easier on the knees, so some people take that a bit far and say, then I'll run the marathon backwards. What? But the idea is I'll go backwards, but what can happen then is this guy, is. But it's the idea then too that I can look right at you and I can do this. Come on, follow me as I run that way facing this way. And God is doing that for us though, looking us in the eye and say, come on, I won't lose contact, eye contact with you because I'm guiding you along. So it's a beautiful word picture. Now we jump to Joshua chapter 3 and continue the story then. Early in the morning, Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out to Shittah and went to the Jordan where they camped before crossing over. So we're all set. The plan is in place. We're going to camp by the Jordan. For many of us, this is what we need. How many people say, man, I just need directions? I just need the plan. If you give me the plan, God, the directions, then we're good. We're good to go. Joshua has that. Camp here. We're going to cross the Jordan. Great. Everything is set. Now we get into the details of it, though. So next slide. Joshua 3:15, it says, now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. So we're like, great, the plan is set, we just need to cross the Jordan. But it just so happens in the details, and this is really important, the Jordan is at flood stage at the time of this. So they've been wandering the desert for 40 years, and now you're going to cross over, but now it's at flood stage because there is this time. Why this is important is because whether you know it or not, the Jordan is not an intimidating, typically not an intimidating body of water. We would almost call it most of the time a creek. So my wife and I were there, and this one, we were there about 2 months after what would be the flood stage time. So about 2 months later, we are here, and there we go. You can walk across. So when it says, well, we gotta part the Jordan, otherwise we can't. No, you could walk. Most of the time, and even as you head to the summer, this is May. You get June, July in Israel, and it's a creek. It's what we would call a creek. So we could, a million people pass, whatever, piece of cake. But then you see in the details, except it's at flood stage. Now the Jordan at flood stage looks like this. Next slide. Whoops, that's a little bit different, right? So at flood stage, so when we read in the text, well, now the Jordan is at flood stage, so it looks like that. Well, that's awesome. So now, in other words, what it is the task before us is really tall. It's really big. You're not just going to walk across. And of course, it's going to be bigger than our abilities. That's the point here. You can't just walk through. It's not a matter of strong legs or good swimming ability. I don't care how good of a swimmer is. You get that going and off you go. So I would say it this way, though. For something to gain depth of meaning, it often begins with depth of difficulty. Have you experienced this in your life? Yeah, a little bit of experience, and you know what? Some of the things in which you reflect on and you go, those things that mean the most is because there was a lot of sweat and blood and guts put into it, and it was, oh, so difficult. And now on this side of it, and you're like, and now it feels like my heart is just that much bigger because of going through it. So it's almost like God knows that, hey, we need to make this thing more. So in order to do this, in order for to be led through this, there's a certain kind of person, if you will, that is needed for the task ahead, at least a few key ingredients that make up the kind of person. We begin with humility. Have you experienced? Humility is something we need in this leader. We need humility. And I would say we need that today more than ever. In a leader, we need humility. In this, and Joshua seems to have this humility. And then strength and courage that we see in the text. It says, be strong and courageous. Now, last week, Kara brilliantly took us through Joshua, and it began with Joshua, son of Nun. So we're like, who is Joshua? Well, he's the son of Nun. So all we get first is just that he's Nun's kid. Then it says he became Moses' assistant. And what did that look like? Moses' assistant, well, Moses would meet with God in the tent of meeting, and Joshua stood outside and was the bouncer. He was the security guard. Basically, keep an eye out. Don't let people in. That's your job. Pretty basic routine tasks. That's what begins with. But then it says this in Deuteronomy, we go back to that. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel, be strong and courageous. Now, this is repeated over and over throughout this story, be strong and courageous. In fact, 7 times to Joshua, he's told to be strong and courageous. And this looks much different than what it does in our culture. Because if you ask people in our culture what strong and courageous is, we tend to think of a big puffed up chest, and maybe that's a military might, and it's a different kind of strong and courageous than what we find throughout the biblical narrative, but especially throughout this story. What sits at both of these words, what these two words are rooted in, is one of the most important concepts for life. Faith. Courage and strength are actually found in faith. Now, here lies the problem. We tend to think faith, a lot of times in our culture, it's described in very abstract, floaty, esoteric language. Well, you should just have faith, and then you should just have more faith. And what we think is it's some sort of floaty thing, but what faith means is the Hebrew word aman. Go ahead and say aman. And it means trust, fidelity, faithfulness. These are action words. We tend to think faith is like upstairs. It's believing, which again, we often, where it's most often translated, the word aman is most often translated believe. When we hear believe, we often in our culture think this, I agree intellectually. But faith, aman, is trust, fidelity, and faithfulness. These are action words. This is really important because it's beyond than intellectual believing. It's our actions spring from what we trust. And this is for everyone. If people say, some people go, I have faith. And if someone goes, I don't do the faith thing. Even if they were to say, I'm an atheist, so I don't have faith. Not true. We all trust someone or something. And that's why the word trust is really important. Because we all trust something or someone, which is why when trust is broken, it feels like everything falls apart. Yes? Because it's foundational to life and it's action-based. Faithfulness in all the small steps. That's what this is about. So when we walk up to the river and it's at flood stage, the response is, well, apparently we get to watch God do some, experience God do some amazing things when we're staring at a river at flood stage, which is exactly what Joshua says. Next slide. He says this to the people. Joshua told the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. Now, that word consecrate, prepare, it's essentially comb your hair or polish your head, put on some clean drawers, put on some deodorant, get ready, prepare yourself, because we're going to experience God moving in an incredible way. Get ready, we're going to God's party, so are you ready to go? Joshua 3:7, next slide. And the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel. Again, lots of people. So they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. That word know is the word yada. Go ahead and say yada. It's an experiential, intimate kind of knowing. Not here, they will know, oh yeah, we got the data. No, we've experienced God's withness, so now we trust. We trust because we've experienced this. We have watched this play out. Verse 8, next slide. tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. Real quick, Ark of the Covenant, when you hear that, if you're like, what's that? It's a box, if you will. And what was held in the box were the tablets that had the Ten Commandments on them. But the way these people believed, they understood, their thought was the very presence of God is in this. So we're carrying the very presence of God, and it says these priests are going to carry it. When they reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river. Now, anybody like a visual learner, like, oh, I'd like to see it. We need to, like movies, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I read the book, but now I see the movie, and you're like, wow, that's what it looks like. So we got a little bit snapshots from the movie. So when you reach the edge of the Jordan, so this is the movie. In Lego form, I guess. So Joshua, who you didn't know, has red hair and a red beard, apparently, but he says to them, when you get to the edge, next slide, then you're going to walk towards, but here's the thing, we're going to get into the key. They're going to take the ark, the priests, head to the water's edge, and apparently this is where we get the phrase from this text. Did you know from this story, this is where we get the phrase, getting your feet wet? Yeah. Getting your feet wet, because here's the instruction. But here's the thing. This is where context teaches us. Because when we use that term, how do we think of it? I'm just testing the waters. I'm just getting my feet wet, which we think is a beginning, right? But here's the thing. This story in context, this is after 40 years of wandering the desert. So when they get their feet wet, it's actually just the next right step. It's not like we're just beginning. It's, well, apparently this is the next step in this massive journey. So getting your feet wet happens, well, maybe all the time, because this step is a new step. And so they're going to get their feet wet. Verse 13. As soon as the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand up in a heap. To be clear, let's hold right there. They have to put their feet in first, right? Such a big deal. Before the water is pushed back, stood up in a heap, I think God wants us to see that here's the thing. You put your foot in first. Because how many people say, I want the path cleared, then I want it paved, and then I want the keys to a new car to drive on it. Then I'll go, right? Oh, I'm just waiting for God. What are you waiting for? Well, I'm waiting for the road to be cleared, paved, and then the car keys. Then I'll drive. Then I know God is in this. Yet in this story, God says, you put your foot in the water, then I'll do this. You trust that when you step in the water, then my turn, if you will. I need you with me, and I need you stepping out, stepping in to this. And it looks like this. Next slide. There you go. There he is, stepping into the water. Now some more details. Next verse. But keep a distance, and this is back in there, some of the details in this, but keep a distance of about 2,000 cubits. We circle that, write it down. Okay, what's that mean? Between you and the ark. Don't go near it. Then we go to verse 16 and 17. Now they're going to cross, and it says this. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground, while all the Israelites, oh, some 2 million, passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground, which looked like this. There they are. Crossing through the waters up beside them. Now, let's go to the numbers. The ark is leading the people forward. The ark goes first and it leads the people forward. And here's the thing, 2,000 cubits equals 3,000 feet. 3,000 feet, which a lot of us would know that's 10 football fields because we measure life by football. So 10 football fields in distance. Now, we can think, oh, we need a distance because we're supposed to fear it, it's scary, or, you know, God's holy, so we can't go close. That's how some can read it. But the reality is, this is God leading. I'm going to go ahead of you. Now, think about the priest carrying this. Hey, I need you to step in the water first, then go stand in the middle, and everyone else is that far back, 10 football fields, which is got to take quite a bit of trust, because if this doesn't go well, do they have time to get to these people before that flood stage says bye-bye to them? No way. You're not going to make it there, especially with those kind of chintzy sandals that they had. You can't run. They don't have Nike Freeze. Like, we're not getting there. Right? Okay. Why stop in the middle? So we know, though, that there's a distance, but first and foremost, it's trust. Trust is where we're beginning. And then to get at the depth of it. You have the distance. You have the leading. God's going first. God's going first ahead. But the leading part, let's think of, and if we reflect on, later on, the great King David writes a song. We often refer to that song as Psalm 23, right? And it says, you, God, will lead me beside what kind of waters? Still waters. You will lead me, so God's leading, and he's going to lead us beside still waters. But then there's a shift. But when you walk through the shadow of the valley of the shadow of death, let's say kind of like a river at flood stage, when you are there, when you're in the midst of that, the language switched from God leading to I will be with you. So when they stop in the middle and it says until everybody passes by, I was leading, God went first, and then God is with them as they go through. I will be with you as you go through something that you can barely even imagine. How is this happening? How are we doing this? And God is like, I am with you. I'll lead you and I'll be with you when it gets a little dicey. Well, when it's long and murky. So, one small step at a time. This whole thing is about one small step at a time, leading the people riverside. Joshua has been faithful all the little steps leading up to this point, which of course makes way to step into the river, even when it's at flood stage. Now, here's what we often like to do. We like to take these characters in the Bible and make them bigger than life. Oh, they have an unattainable faith. They're so big there in this thing. But this story is all about what? Small steps. We get that? It's about all the little steps along the way. Joshua taking that next right step, which makes way, because I would say it this way. Next slide. How you do anything is how you do everything. How you do anything is how you do everything. How you do the little steps along the way is how you're going to do the big things. It's like this preparation thing. We know this because we don't give someone big stuff until we've watched them do little things. Anybody ask a two-year-old, go ahead and jump in the car and just drive it? Or do we, no, you ride the bike first. You do this, little step, little step, little step. So I would say it this way, before we step up, we have to step in. Before we step up, we have to step in. Before the big thing, we just actually have to say, I'm going to do the little things all along the way that prepare us, set us up, prepare our hearts, our character, our integrity, the whole bit to do the bigger things. Now, on January 15, 2009, there was something called the Miracle on the Hudson. So this year was the 10th anniversary of it. Anybody hear of the Miracle on the Hudson? We'll get into it a little bit. But I was in New York last week and people are still talking about it. There were a couple times we sat down to eat and I heard people talking about the Miracle on the Hudson. And they're still talking about 10th anniversary, so I read the story again. Just going through and reading the story, then Sarah and I watched the movie. Anybody see the movie with Tom Hanks? Yeah. So this movie about how it all unfolds, and I was reflecting, thinking the similarities in leadership between what Captain Sully, as he is, and Joshua, and it is fascinating. So I just kind of wrote up a consensus little, here's the summary of the story, if you're not familiar with it. In January of 2009, U.S. Airways Flight 1549 became known as the Miracle on the Hudson. After bird strikes knocked out both engines, Captain Chesley Sully Sullenberger and First Officer Jeffrey Skiles brought the plane back to Earth on the only runway they felt they could safely reach, the wide expanse of the Hudson River that separates Manhattan from New Jersey. All 150 passengers and five crew members made it off the plane. That's 100% of the people survived. What's remarkable is how quickly everything happened, especially given the outcome. 2 minutes after taking off from LaGuardia Airport, the plane ran into a flock of Canadian geese. The birds hit both engines, creating the near total loss of thrust. That was at 3:27 p.m. The plane was just 2,800 feet up and nowhere near its cruising speed, meaning the pilots had maximum a few minutes to find a safe path to the ground. 5 seconds after the strike, Sullenberger was trying to restart the engines. Then he took control of the plane from Skiles, who had been flying. 5 seconds after that, he told Skiles to start running through the emergency checklist for dual engine loss, which was designed to handle problems at a cruising altitude, which they're not at, when pilots have far more time to cope. Then he reported the problem to air traffic control, saying he needed to return to LaGuardia, and started to turn south. Within a minute, Sullenberger had decided it was too risky to return to the airport. He later told investigators it would have been an irrevocable choice. Next, they rejected Teterboro Airport in New Jersey, thinking they didn't have the speed or altitude to make the distance. Sullenberger said, too far away, too low, and too slow. Newark Airport was even farther. That left the river below them. That part of the Hudson is about 4,000 feet wide, so the pilots didn't have to come down perfectly parallel the way they would on a 150-foot landing strip, which is typical, right? It's a whole lot longer, too, so they wouldn't have to worry about overrunning if they came down late. And while water's not as smooth as a paved runway, it'll work in a pinch. At 3:29 p.m., oh, we started at 3:27 p.m., 3:29 p.m., 2 minutes after the bird strike, Sullenberger addressed the cabin for the first time, telling his passenger, "This is the captain, brace for impact." 1 minute later, 3:30 p.m., the plane plowed into the water. Within seconds of the water landing, the crew started the evacuation, guiding passengers out the exits, over the wings, and out the front doors onto the rafts. All this took place in 208 seconds. People applaud the courage and split-second decision-making of Sully, but the reality is he spent 40 years flying, preparing him for this moment. It was a life of landing on the everyday runway that prepared him for landing on the unexpected runway. Are you with me? Yeah, it's the everyday, this is what I do, the next right step, the next right step, the next right step. And then when this comes into your face, well, what have I been doing for 40 years? I guess I'll do that in the unexpected runway. Now, a number of Jewish sources highlight that the point of the Exodus is not the promised land, but the journey toward the promised land. That's the point. Because although people are now out of Egypt, that is out of slavery, the journey in the desert is about getting the slavery out of the people. That's the whole journey. It's not just getting out of slavery, but we have to get the slavery out of us. Life isn't really about destinations, the cloud nine landings, but rather the journey toward destinations, or what I call the space between the clouds. Of course, because faith and faithfulness hold hands. Trust grows along the journey, in the midst of the journey, which is why we need a pliable, expanding faith. A faith that is relentlessly preparing to face the shadowy waters, because the next right step, well, maybe it's at flood stage. The faith we had yesterday was for yesterday's obstacles and opportunities. That faith was for leaving Egypt, but today the obstacle, well, today the obstacle is water, and it apparently is at flood stage. So we need a growing, pliable, flexible faith in this. You've been there, yes? He left, she died, the child that none of the books have an answer for, the medical diagnosis, the business partner that went sideways, that puddle or river or sea seemed uncrossable. And you prayed for a boat, right? But the invitation is just to take the next right step. Oh, the invitation is, will you get your feet wet? I just need you to get right up to the edge and get your feet wet. That's the invitation. Sarah and I recently spent a few days with some friends, and we were sitting down and we shared some conversations, and we went back and we started telling stories of yesteryear. You know this, right? And we started talking about back then and some of the things that we went through in our lives. And inevitably, someone said, it's amazing that you're here today, that you made it through that, and that you're here today. But I would say it this way. Next slide. That first step seems so big, one that derails so many people, but not you. You're here and you're stronger and deeper because of the faithfulness of each step, which began with the next right step. You're here today because all of those little steps, you're here. Oop, back up. And maybe the waters part, or maybe entering will drench you. I don't know. Maybe the waters part, maybe you get wet. Either way, our invitation is for pliable hearts. Because today, the divine is going to do something amazing, not because the outcome is as we scripted it, but because we have found God faithful in our flexing. God is faithful in our flexing. I'm trusting. I'm bending. I have a pliable heart, God. I'm putting my foot in the water, and God is faithful. Whether or not we get wet or the thing parts. Because faith is a sweaty, bloody wrestling match. The struggle is the gold. Do you know? It's the very name of the biblical people, Israel. Israel means to wrestle with God and with man and to overcome. Israel means God wrestles, one who struggles with God. That's the name of the people. In fact, the people's name is B'nai Yisrael, children of the one who wrestles. You are a child of the wrestling match. That's who we're to be known for, those who wrestle. It's how we grow. It's the invitation to become more. I would say it this way. Yesterday's sea is today's river. Today's river might be tomorrow's creek. Tomorrow's creek might be the next day's puddle. Maybe. What we are learning is this, is that the waters of resistance always show up, but the fear of death shrinks in the face of the expanding trust of resurrection. That's where we're at, the growingness, which brings us to the Eucharist, which you all saw coming. It brings us to the Eucharist because here's the thing. We don't sidestep the waters of death. We face them trusting the divine will guide us through them and is with us through them. Because that is the life of Jesus, which we are witness to when we stand at the table. Jesus faced resistance and opposition head on. And his next step was out of death and into life that is bigger than death. So when we partake of the Eucharist, when we partake, it's a symbol of giving thanks. Here's the thing. When we partake, that's actually a symbol of thank you for your sacrifice, for your life of facing it all head on and going through it. Then when we emulate the Eucharist, that is break ourselves open and pour ourselves out, that's our worship. When we come to the table, it's not our worship to take, that's our giving thanks. Oh, we bless you, God. Then when we say we will follow you in your example of breaking ourselves open and pouring ourselves out, that's our act of worship. Are you with me? It's not just taking, but it's giving. It's embodying the gift. This is the bread and this is the cup, a body that entered death in order to conquer and quell death. Take it as a symbol of getting your feet wet. That's what we'll do this morning. When we step up to it, this is just a symbol. It's a picture of us saying, I'll get my feet wet. I'll take that next right step. Whatever that is for you, whatever it is you're facing, you say, I'll get my feet wet. I'm going to take that first, next step forward. So we're going to have a couple people on this side, and we will have a couple of folks over here. And we'll just invite you as you feel led. We can sing together, you can sit, you can take it in, and then as you come forward, you'll hear something like, this bread represents Jesus, his body given, gifted for you. The cup represents his blood who's poured out for you. We remember and say thanks, and then we embody as an act of worship. We take in, say thanks. You gave us life, and you gave us the example. And we do that this morning. May it be a picture of you saying, I'll get my feet wet. Gracious God, we bless you for here and now and this invitation, this opportunity. God, we recognize that you are with us now. And you lead us. You walk backwards, never breaking eye contact, calling us, summoning us, encouraging us, guiding us forward. May we, even now, take that step to get our feet wet. Whatever we're facing, whatever the struggle, the wrestling match is, God, we recognize you are with us. Trust that you are with us and that you're leading us. Not necessarily out of this, but through this. And we know the other side is depth and gratitude. So God, here we are, your church, desiring to take the next right step with you. This is us meeting you where you have met us. We offer all of this in the name of Christ Jesus.